This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. How are you? What a weekend.
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Yeah, it feels like we've been through months and months of war, but in fact, we're on day 11 of Operation Rising Lions, Kelavi. Of course, this is the operation against Iran, but it has certainly been an eventful weekend. And of course, we shouldn't forget that with all this excitement, we are still on day 626 of Operation Swords of Iron, and day 626, where we still have 50 hostages, many of whom are alive in Gaza. And of course, we can't afford to lose sight of all of that. It's like a war within a war, and we continue.
We do continue. All right, so let's just talk about everything that happened. Following the U.S. attacks against three of the nuclear sites, Israel is obviously waiting to see what Iran is going to do. How are things likely to play out from here?
So I think the first part of the answer is last night, because one single missile fired from Iran at 3 a.m. in Israel this morning. Many people, probably hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, awake in their bomb shelters because of a single missile. And some people are saying, really, we're being woken up now for one miserable missile? It's almost like insulting to have to wake up for one missile. Interestingly, the Iranian regime this morning say, no, that wasn't us. That missile was fired by the Houthis. It was almost like embarrassing to have to admit that only one missile was fired. But we can't forget yesterday, because yesterday was a barrage of rockets fired by the Iranians towards central Israel. Massive destruction caused by missiles that managed to break their way through Israel's dome, Israel's system of air defense, anti-missile systems that managed to intercept many of the missiles, but it only takes one or two to get through the barrier, and massive destruction was caused. And in fact, it's miraculous that nobody was killed in one particular incident in the Tel Aviv area, where I think six apartment buildings were completely destroyed, literally completely destroyed. When you see the scenes of destruction there, it looks like Armageddon. And in fact, the missile apparently hit one of the bomb shelters of one of those buildings, and 30 odd people who were in that bomb shelter all came out alive. Everybody came out okay. Some of them were slightly injured. They were all very, very shaken up, but they came out alive. And that just demonstrates the importance of going into bomb shelters. So yesterday we certainly felt the wrath of the Iranians coming down on us. In the wake of the attack that took place, Operation Midnight Hammer. You've got to love the American style of naming the operation, Operation Midnight Hammer. Those B-2 bombers that dropped the bunker buster bombs on Natanz, on Isfahan, and of course on Fordo. According to the words of the U.S. president, caused massive destruction, completely obliterated, I think was the word
he used. Obliterated a few times. I love the word obliterated.
Completely obliterated those facilities. The truth is that we don't know what damage was done, the extent of the damage. We're still waiting to assess because, of course, most of the damage will have been done underground. We don't really have visibility of it. I love these satellite pictures that show the before and the after. And the only difference between before and after are like three holes in the ground where the bombs penetrate, and that's all you can really see. The rest looks exactly the same.
Although an expert pointed it out to me this morning, if you look at it, you'll see ash, and that is apparently a telltale sign. And I hadn't noticed it before until it was pointed out, and then you can actually see the ash on the ground. So have a look at that.
So we maybe need to have a slightly more educated eye when looking at these satellite pictures, but on the face of it, I think the message is that we don't really know what has been obliterated or not until the information starts to come out. And of course, the other piece of information is that the 400 kilograms of 60% enriched uranium, I think that Israel already knew before the attacks took place that that uranium wasn't there at any of those locations, although there are some speculations going around that it might well have been at Isfahan, but we don't really know for sure. And of course, the Prime Minister yesterday said we have information about where the uranium really is, but I suppose the question is, how important is the uranium itself? I mean, I guess they could use that uranium still to produce some sort of a nuclear weapon. But the most important thing is that their facilities to produce more have been destroyed. Alongside that, their military production facilities have been destroyed. So even though they may have the uranium, and I'm guessing Israel has some plans about what they might want to do with that uranium, but even if they do have the uranium, they need to be able to produce the missiles to attach that uranium warhead to. We understand that before this war, Iran was producing something like 300 ballistic missiles a month, and that they had a stock in the order of around 3,000 somewhere stored away in various locations in Iran. Up until now, we understand there's something like 500 have been used so far, and many hundreds more destroyed by Israeli attacks. But the most important thing is that their attempt to try to ramp up the production of ballistic missiles has failed because Israel has targeted the production facilities, which has effectively prevented them from ramping up their production of ballistic missiles. So where to from here? What do we expect to happen next? What are the options that are available to the Iranians to allow them to save face in the light of what has really been quite a week in Iranian politics? I mean, 10 days probably in Iranian politics. They've really gone from something of a hero to a zero. Mm. And it's interesting how Israel over the last 18 months to 2 years has effectively taken out Hezbollah, has taken out Hamas, has taken out, then attacked Iran, and of course neutralized the Houthis to some degree, because the whole idea was that at the moment that Iran would attack Israel, Israel would also be set upon by the Houthis, by Hamas, by Hezbollah, and by all others. And so it would be a kind of a surrounded situation where Israel would have to be fighting a war on multiple fronts. And yet Israel somehow systematically has managed to take out all of those threats. And now when the main protagonist has been drawn directly into the war, the others are not available to help them. And of course, this has weakened their position dramatically. So what are Iran's options from here on out? Well, first of all, it was interesting that they threatened the US that they would release sleeper cells that are in the United States. Mm. Now, there are some times when you want to threaten people with information that you don't really want them to know about. And I think that this is really one of those situations where they've had to come out and admit to the fact that they had planted sleeper cells that could potentially carry out attacks in the United States, and those sleeper cells are effectively ready to carry out these attacks. And so it's just like you know, how to use incriminating evidence
Absolutely.
To incriminate yourself Yeah. even further. So those sleeper cells, I think, are probably not an option for them in light of everything that's happened in the greater context of things. They do have the option of attacking U.S. bases, whether it be in Diego Garcia or a base in Guam or a base in Saudi Arabia. The problem, of course, is that that potentially draws others into this conflict. Or I forgot about the base in the United Arab Emirates in Qatar. That's a possible option. And according to the words of the Iranian regime, to attack those bases is easier than attacking Israel, whatever that might mean. But obviously, that would really mean drawing the U.S. even further into this war, and potentially others as well,
wherever that base is located. Which is a problem.
And then we have the possibility of Iran attacking the U.S. mainland. Now, whether they're able to do that and whether they really want to do that is an interesting question, because we have this animal as well lurking in the background called NATO. And even though NATO has been shown to be very toothless without the U.S. leading from the front, and therefore my expectation is that even if NATO does get involved, it won't make much of a difference to the U.S. capability to defend itself, although we have Turkey as a member of NATO, which is a whole different discussion that we can get into at another time. But my expectation is that the most likely response is going to be more attacks on Israel. I think that that is really the way in which the Iranians are going to try to ramp this up and potentially attack Israel further. I think that the Israeli government has also reached the same conclusion, the security establishment, which means that in the early hours of yesterday morning, the restrictions that had been slightly lifted at the end of last week were reimposed. So we are currently in a kind of a lockdown situation back to where we were more than a week ago. No gyms, no shops or anything that are not considered to be essential services. People are not really supposed to go to work. Schools haven't been operating since the attack that took place on the 13th of June. And now we're actually formally into the school holiday period. We're into the summer holiday period, so many of the schools will have already closed anyway, even if they were operating. So we're essentially in a lockdown situation. It's unclear how long this lockdown can continue and will continue, and how long we should wait for the Iranians to respond. We know that they have a massive array of different weapons that they could potentially use against us. They've already used some cluster bombs. We understand that the damage that was caused at Soroka Hospital in Beersheba was as a result of a cluster bomb. A cluster bomb is an illegal weapon that splits into different warheads approximately 7 kilometers from the target, and therefore is able to attack multiple targets as it descends towards this target. That's a highly illegal weapon, but we understand that it has been used in Soroka and potentially in other places as well. It also makes things very difficult for Israel to defend itself against, because all of a sudden, instead of a single warhead, you've got multiple warheads that are coming down towards the target. So that becomes a very difficult thing. But as I say, I think that in having reviewed all the potential ways in which Iran might try to save some face and to respond to this massive attack that the US has carried out. And by the way, even if the facilities haven't been obliterated, the embarrassment that Iran is having to face up to in the international community is just something that will last for a very, very long time. And so I think that the damage has really been done. I think that Israel is in the firing line right now. What that means from here on out, I guess, remains to be seen. We can speculate from here until the end of days. But I think that really we'll have to just wait day by day to see how things are. And in the meantime, the Israeli home front continues to be very, very tired and sleep deprived, but very firm in its resolve to resist this. And people are incredible in their spirit and their determination and the way in which this is being dealt with on the home front in Israel.
Let's just talk for a moment about the people that are stranded abroad and people, you know, we know many stranded in Israel who are looking to return to their places of origin. What is the latest here?
So there have been flights in and out, and there have been numerous stories about people hiring yachts from Cyprus to get to Israel. There have been stories about people landing in Jordan and making the road trip across. For Israelis, that's not quite so easy because Israelis are not able to cross through the Allenby Bridge, and so that becomes a lot more difficult. They've either got to cross in Aqaba or they've got to cross at the Beit Sha'an crossing, which makes things a lot more difficult. The costs are astronomical. There are flights that there have been, and there are still some flights that have been bringing Israelis back, particularly from Athens and from Cyprus, where people have seemed to have congregated. There's been a whole community of people that have sprung up in Cyprus and Athens in particular, but also other European cities of Israelis who have waitlisted themselves on El Al rescue flights, repatriation flights to bring them home. Communities of people who are looking for medication, looking for accommodation, are looking to try and support each other outside of Israel. And of course, for foreigners caught in Israel, this is not so much fun. They didn't really sign up for a war when they came to visit. That's certainly not a war of this nature, and being sent to your bomb shelters every night. So there have been flights organized by various foreign embassies for their nationals to somehow get out. Most of them take a land route either via Egypt or via Jordan and fly from there. It's not simple, it's not cheap, and you need to be very patient. There are people who have suggested that in order to bring those Israelis home who are stuck abroad at the moment, it's going to take some months, not days, not weeks, months until they can all come home. But of course, there is concern about the safety of air flight in and out of Israel, given the nature of the missiles that we're receiving at the moment. So people will need to check their flight details, need to check their travel plans, and be very, very patient.
It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. You can catch Anthony tomorrow morning at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.